Right, good evening, everyone. The topic that we're going to talk about today is searching for peace within ourselves. So what does this topic want to say? So I think in terms of searching for the peace within ourselves, you probably have heard of a lot of talks on how we need to purify ourselves, we want to calm ourselves, we want to find peace within ourselves. So, what do we want to talk about tonight? So, we all know that the cause of unpeace, I think from first semester until now, you probably have listened to many talks, and there will be a lot of talks that try to identify what are the causes of frustration, restlessness in ourselves. Is that right? So what are the causes of unpeace? What makes us feel not peaceful?
Worry?
Yes, a lot of you have a lot of worries at the moment.
Stress.
Huh? What's that?
Stress.
Okay. Too many things on your hand. Yes?
Dealing with people.
Yes. Dealing with people. Cannot understand what other people like, what other people is thinking. Yes, that leads to stress and frustration, worries, unknown, uncertainty. So these are causes of suffering. So if these are the causes of suffering, how can we overcome them? So some of you have said that stress, worries, dealing with people. What else?
Desire.
Pardon?
Desire.
Yes. A lot of wish in yourself. After buying one house, want to buy the second house. After buying one car, want to have another car. Right? Always feel that the balance in your bank is not enough. And always think that I think I need to save more just in case something happens. You know that just in case is a kind of worries as well? It's a sense of uncertainty. We have a lot of just in case. So therefore, we find excuses for our desire just in case something happens. So therefore, it is all right for me to have this desire. So from all this problem, can you identify the cause behind what you have said, what has been presented? It happens. But what's behind it that leads to this suffering or phenomena that you are experiencing? Ignorance, okay, attachment. So ignorance about what?
Everything.
So ignorance about the things that we're attaching to. And ignorance about our own mind. We do not know why is our mind chasing after a lot of things. So we just follow suit, whatever comes to us. And we actually didn't think, where does this thought come from? And how does it happen? But we just run after it. What was it? Is that right? So yesterday, I think, we were in the Chinese Dharma talk, and we were talking about this yesterday as well. We say that we have our sense organ. So you have your eye. Your ear, your nose, your tongue, your body, and then also the mind. Right? So the sense organs contact with external object. So every of these will come, will contact with taste, the nose, smell, and then the ears will hear some sound, and the eyes will see some appearance, right? And the body with some contact. Now, so when the organ, the sense organ, contact with external objects, they send message back to the mind. And the mind start to the mind start to differentiate or analyze or discriminate, and then we develop consciousness. So a lot of time we say this consciousness, we are conscious. In fact, our consciousness is a consciousness that just responds to what happened, what the information, the organ contact object, and then comes down and then it reflects. It's a process of information. And this mind not only analyze, absorb, or just reflect on what the sense organs have sent back, it also attached to itself as an I, a self. So whatever they contact with and comes back, when the mind reflected and discriminate or recognize the things, it comes with a concept of I as well. And that's what happened. So when we, and our ignorance, just when we talk about ignorance, we are ignorant about what is the things outside that we are chasing after. We are also ignorant about our own mind. What is this mind about? And attaching the whole thing as an I.
Is the consciousness is the same as the feeling?
The consciousness is usually in the sutra we define consciousness as the ability to distinguish. So the feelings is just still just a bit more direct. So if you remember the five aggregates, have you studied the five aggregates? You have form. So form is the object, okay? It's form, and then you have sensation or feelings. So when the, say for example, the nose contact with external object, it reflects back, right? And then you have this, initially is feeling, but with the mind, add on more discrimination into it, and it develops into consciousness. So the process in here includes here, feeling, perception, mental formation. Can I wrap up the picture? It's such a nice picture. And consciousness. So this part here is what the mind reflects on, right? And then it develops consciousness. In other words, all these organs have external object, and the mind's object is actually the internal object of this. Because the mind, and that's why we say, when we say the sense organs, we have the eyes, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, the eyes, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mind as the six sense organ, and then they correspond to six objects. That is the form, the sound, the smell, the taste, the body, and with the mind, we say the object is the Dharma. Is that right? So the Dharma refers to anything. And it can also be something that's not necessary in terms of form as it is. But it can be whatever that the eyes contact with, and then they fall back the image. So we say that this mind is just like the main editor, the chief editor. You've got all these reporters, the journalists that send out to collect information. So these are all the journalists, and then they send back. So the chief editor will then compile this together, and then respond to it, okay? Or then respond to it, or compile and proofread it before you publish it to the rest. So that's what the MAI is doing, all right? And besides doing that, this chief editor also have some its own task that's cling on to this whole thing as like, this newspaper is mine. that kind of eye, right? So that's why the mind has got, it analyze what is coming in, and then also you hold on to the whole thing as an eye. So when we talk about our ignorance, we are ignorant about what is happening outside, we also ignorant about what is happening inside. And that's why when there's anything and give us a feeling, and then immediately we just process very quickly without proper analysis of what is the truth of this, what is the truth of our mind, and we just respond to it. And lead us to a lot of suffering. So the mind attached to itself as it is, and we develop a very strong I, concept of I, self-centeredness. So with this self-centeredness, plus not understanding the external object, then we lead to attachment. Because we think that all these things belong to us because of this I. So when all these journalists go out and collect things, everything's related to me. It's all about me. Okay? So that leads to attachment. So because of this self-attachment, self-centeredness, and not understanding the things outside, whether it is an object or whether it's an issue, whether it's a human relationship, whatever it is, it's all linked to us. We did not understand that it is just, if you put it into a bit slower motion, then you can see that it is a process of information that links together. But to us, we are unable to see this process of information that is just not just one thing. But when we see an object, we see it as a thing. We got deluded by its outlook, its appearance. So sometimes I exemplify this like the cloud that we see, right? If you know the cloud, we all know the cloud. The cloud is just a lot of water vapor. But when you look at the cloud, you tend to box it up just like one thing. One piece. So a lot of everything that we see, we tend to box it up like a piece. And every one of you have studied science before. We studied solid, liquid, and gas. Right? So if you know the solid, or the molecules or the atoms in the solid, they are more, the bonding is closer. And the distance between the bonding is stronger, right? So that clinging together is stronger. If the molecules is a bit separate out, then you have liquid. And gas is freer. So if your self-attachment is strong, then you are just boxing yourself up like a solid. And that's why wherever you go, you're going to crash with a lot of people. If you are liquid, it's a bit better because you can just change your shape, you're a bit more flexible, and you can just suit into, you just can adapt to any container. If you're a guest, that's even free. Is that right? So that's what happened to us. But we are ignorant about ourselves, we are ignorant about things around us. In fact, everything are not as fixed as we thought. Even when we say object, the mind, we tend to think of ear and eyes and nose as one thing. But look into ourselves. The eyes. Look into the eyes. I say sometimes from your head to your toes. Just scan through yourself. From your head, your hair. Under your hair, you have your scar. Is it? And then under your scar, you have your brain. And inside the brain, you have all these nervous system, blood vessel. It's too complex, right? And then you go down further. You go down further. You got eyes, you got ear, you got nose. If you look into it, which part is your eye? And every of this part has to be put together in the right place at the right time at the right speed. It's much complex than if you open up your computer and say there's a lot of microchip. Some of you study electronic engineering. A lot of microchip, right? But our body is much more complex than that. So it is a combination of so many things. Where is I? But we seldom remember that. So we develop a very strong self-centeredness. And because of this self-centeredness, we develop greed, hatred, delusion, jealousy, arrogance, suspicions. All this lead to a lot of frustration. Okay, I think you probably have talked about this quite often. So what we need to do is, when we say we want to find peace within ourselves, first of all, we need to recognize that there are this self, ignorance about self that we need to break through, ignorance about the external object that we need to break through as well. Okay, so we have to understand that everything arises due to causes and conditions. They are always in the process of changing. They are not as fixed as what we thought. And if we are able to have that basic understanding, and the next thing is what we want to go on to talk about is that when we say that we want to find peace within ourselves, a lot of time we say, okay, I want to find peace within ourselves. But, so today I would like to touch on a bit from a different perspective. That is, if we always think that I want to find peace within ourselves, but then if, for example, we say that a lot of you have said, oh, people are difficult to deal with, okay? If we have some rules and regulation for everyone, if the rules and regulation are helpful, for example, in a school, they say no one should swear, everyone should greet the teacher, no one should make noise in the class, it helps everyone to feel a bit more peaceful as well. If you are in a society where the rules are all over the place, the rules are corrupted, people are not behaving themselves, then you find that even if you yourself try to purify your mind, whenever you go out of your house, you get very angry because of people not doing the right thing. Okay, so what I would like to say here is that besides eliminating causes of suffering in ourselves, we have to understand that our surrounding can affect us as well, especially for us who are learning, who are in the process of learning. And that's why you need to come to Unibus. If you don't come to Unibus and attend the Dharma talk, how many of you will listen to Dharma talk or take a book of a Dharma book and read on a Friday night? Right? But because some of your friends encourage one another and they say, oh, after Dharma talk, after EDT, we're going for dinner together. Or you say, okay, I'll come afterwards, I'll join for dinner. So some people come just because afterwards they want to go together for dinner. Right? But at least it helps us to calm our mind for these few hours. Or at least allow us to direct our mind to different topics and plant different seeds in our mind for this few moments that we have. So we have to understand that our surrounding can affect us. So it is just that if we keep trying to keep our own house clean and do not care about the street, so your house is so clean. Whenever you open the door, look at the neighbor chucked the rubbish into your front yard. And then, especially if you live in the flat, you go to the place where all the rubbish bins are. Everyone not throwing rubbish in the right way. you get very angry. So you try to meditate, calm your mind, and then you go to the rubbish bin. So if we only keep our own house clean, but the surrounding is dirty, we will not actually feel really at peace as well. Especially for us who are still in the process of learning, right? And if we really develop a peaceful mind, a pure and peaceful mind, but you go out and see so many things which is in a mess, will you feel happy? If you already free yourself from greed, hatred, jealousy, anger, but then you go out, you see other people are full of all this greed, hatred, jealousy, anger, full of dirt everywhere, will you feel happy? So that's probably something that we need to think about. This is vice versa. So one hand is that if we are clean ourselves, when you go out, you see other people are just doing wrong thing. If our own practice are not good enough, immediately you get angry. So a lot of people, they are very diligent in practice themselves, but they go out, and especially if you work with people who are a bit harsh, who are unreasonable, you find that you lost your temper very quickly. All your practice has gone. And then on the other hand, if other people are pretty good, you are the only one who is restless, like kids who are restless. The whole class is good. Only one person who is very naughty. So sometimes this naughty one can make everyone naughty. Or this person can be, it depends on how good their friends are. There was once I was teaching a kindergarten meditation. There was one kid who was very cheeky. He tried to sing when everyone is meditating, and then he went to touch everyone's head when he was meditating. And that was kindergarten. It was very interesting. There are 9 of them. And there's this one boy who keep walking around, and then he sing, and then he go and touch everyone. But then the other 8, let's see, Don't care about him. They try to signal one another. It was very interesting. And so at the end, that boy just sit at the side in the corner because no one cares about him. But that was a very special class. It was a very special class. So what we want to say is that if the surrounding is good and we are not as pure, then we may be influenced by the friends around and then learn to be good as well. And that's where spiritual friends are important. Good friends are important, especially when we are learning the teachings of the Buddha. With friends' encouragement, friends' guidance, practicing together, encouragement, it can help us to progress. Okay? Not only friends in the same level, sometimes you have teachers or wise advisor, friends who have more experience, sharing teachings, guiding one another is actually very important. So therefore, what I'd like to highlight here is that besides looking for peace within ourselves, it is also important for us to think about people around us. So the ultimate peace, a real peace, is to attain peacefulness within ourselves and also try to create peacefulness to our surrounding, encourage peacefulness in our surrounding. So that is besides cleaning ourselves, we want to clean the surrounding as well. And it is with such a great mind that we can attain real peace and ease. So that's why the Buddha and the Bodhisattva, besides they themselves attain Buddhahood, they try to help and guide others to attain enlightenment, to be free from suffering. One is out of great compassion that they themselves have practiced, and they realize this that this greed, hatred, jealousy, ignorance cause a lot of frustration. And all of us do not like that frustration. It's very disturbing. but we do not know how to get rid of them. The Buddha, the Bodhisattva, the great Bodhisattva has get rid of all these afflictions and attain enlightenment. And they share the feelings of others. They understand that everyone likes to be peaceful and happy. In fact, everyone in the world likes to be peaceful and happy. But it's just that we got carried away by our desire, ignorance. We engage in wrong action, wrong speech, and wrong thoughts that we thought is going to lead us to happiness, but at the end, it brings us more suffering. So the Buddha and Bodhisattva set an example for us on how that we, besides taking care of ourselves, it is important to share the feelings of others, and it is by sharing the feelings of others that they try to encourage others to be good, and at the same time, try to create a collective environment which is peaceful, that is peaceful for everyone. Okay, so do not just look for peace within ourselves, but we should try. Do not just enclose a peace just within ourselves, but we should try to help others to find peace as well. So the other question is, how can we strengthen our thoughts of purifying ourselves and others? So a lot of time people tend to think that, well, I need to purify myself first. I'm full of afflictions. How can I help others? So of course, if we ourselves are full of afflictions, you may feel that you can't help others. But all of us here, you have some strength and some weakness. You can just apply whichever aspect that you are more expert in, whichever part that you can help. Even to give someone a smile, an encouragement. People comes in, and you give them a smile. They say, "Oh, they feel warm." That is a good thing. So it's not necessary that you're guiding. You have to guide someone to liberation. Sometimes we think that we need to do something. When we say we need to help others, it means that you need to help others to the stage that they attain liberation. So therefore, they say, "We are not liberated. I'm not liberated as yet. I'm full of afflictions. How can I help others?" We have to understand, even we encourage someone to come to Dharma talk. And then after listening to talk, they arose their interest. Planting a seed, that is a way of helping. You do not need to speak yourself. You just need to persuade them to come. And make them feel happy. Right? That is guiding. That is already a help. If every one of you think about how did you get into learning the Buddha's teaching, or how did you get into Unibus, it's because of what? A lot of you come because of friendship. Or you come because of food. Or because there was a potluck. Okay, we come. Or because there's a show, there's a Bodhi night. You come, right? So someone encouraged you to come, that's already a help. And during the process of learning, you may feel a bit, "Oh no, I don't want to go to retreat." Some friends encourage you, and you go first time. "Oh, not too bad, it's not so scary." Okay. So that kind of encouragement is already a help, right? So, and help does not necessarily be just help in terms of listening to teachings. It can be help in other aspects. For example, you help others to feel a bit more comfortable. If someone is depressed, make them feel a bit more positive. All these are help as well, right? So how can we strengthen our thoughts of purifying ourselves and others? First, we always have to remember that while we are able to learn the Buddha's teaching, we are all sitting here, we have to be thankful to a lot of people. Since we were born until now, a lot of people have helped us in one way or another. So we owe gratitude to a lot of people. Our parents, our grandparents, friends, teachers, people that we know, people that we do not know. So people who make food, people who make the clothes, people who have manufactured all the stationeries for you, who have built the schools, everyone. And this day with internet, it looks like everyone's in. When you want to write assignment, you Google information. How many people are involved in that? We do not know, behind the scene. Right? So we really have to have this sense of appreciation and gratitude to a lot of people, whether people who have been friendly to us or people who have been unfriendly to us. Because sometimes even people who are not friendly to us, they allow us to understand that we are not perfect, and that's why people get angry with us. Otherwise, sometimes we may think that I'm great, but then there are someone who start to get very angry with you, then you start to realize that, oh, yeah, I'm still not perfect in my speech, actions, and thought, and that's why someone got angry with me. And then it allows you to learn to be a bit more modest and reflect on yourself and then improve yourself. So sometimes unfavorable circumstances can actually be more effective. Keep praising, sometimes you become arrogant. So to understand that we are all interrelated, we owe gratitude to a lot of people, and this society that we're living in is dependent originated. It exists due to the coming together of many causes and conditions. We are part of the causes and conditions. And our life rely on a lot of causes and conditions support, and we should also give support to others. So that sense of appreciation and gratitude help us to develop our loving kindness and compassion to others. That while we are living in this society, we're just like in a internet, like the net. We need to play our role to do our part while other people help us. Okay? So that's the first thing. By having this understanding, rather than having grouch, anger, jealousy with others, whoever you see, always have a mind of thanking them, appreciation, sense of gratitude. Then you find that you will actually be happier. And you really like others to be happy as well. Because you start to understand that they are just like your family member in one way or another. This big family of the world. Everyone here make up Unibus, right? And then everyone in your family make up the family. Everyone in the society make up our society. Everyone in the world, we collectively create a world. How do you want the world to be like? We all have a responsibility. You didn't say, oh, the world ends up to be like this. It's all because of US. All because of Russia, because they're bigger. We play part of the role as well. It's just that the impact may not be that strong, right? So this interrelationship, understand the teaching of interrelationship, dependent origination, the world is dependent originated, and everyone is interrelated to one another. We have sense of appreciation and gratitude and loving kindness to others. And the other thing is about understand that everyone are actually equal in nature. We are all, as we say, it's a combination of many causes and conditions. We tend to think of people as differentiate, distinguish people, discriminate people according to their outlook. This person is handsome, that person is ugly, or that person is tall, this person is short, that person is skinny, or that person is a bit too big. So we forgot that everything is actually a lot of causes and conditions. But then we tend to see it as from the appearance. And then immediately what we cling on, discriminate. What we discriminate is the appearance. It's not the inside. So this is the appearance, the phenomena. We are not looking at the nature of it, the essence of it. Essence of it, everything is equal. Everything is just causes and conditions. But we tend to, and that's why we got ourselves into a lot of trouble. Because we see things, we discriminate immediately. This color, I do not like this color, or I like this color. But if put into microscope, whether it's a red cloth or a yellow cloth, doesn't make much difference, right? So, but we tend to attach to the appearance. So now what I want you to do is to not to take away the box. Don't put this box. Okay? Like the cloud. Take away the dotted line. I think we tend to use solid line. So make it dotted line and even take away the dotted line. Then all the causes and conditions are actually in harmony. So when you understand that, then we understand that, in fact, everyone are equal in nature. Everyone are just causes and conditions. And everyone has the same potential. So by understanding the teachings of causes and conditions, we learn to reduce our self-centeredness and also be able to see, to appreciate people around us a bit better. So understand the teaching of causes and conditions allow us to understand the things that we see as well as ourselves. At the same time, the teachings of interrelationship between one another, the dependent origination, interrelationship between one another allow us to develop the compassion. So the understanding of the nature of it allow us to reduce self-centeredness, see it from the truth. And then understand the interrelationship allow us to have a bit of feelings toward others and try and understand that all these people have been helping me one way and another. And because of understanding that everyone is equal in nature and that everything arises due to causes and conditions, they are all in the process of changing. In other words, everyone can change. Everyone can improve. And that's why in Buddhism we say everyone has the potential to attain Buddhahood. Because the Buddha was an ordinary person before. But he practiced, he overcome his afflictions, free himself from self-centeredness, develop wisdom and compassion, seeing the truth, become perfect in his wisdom and compassion, and he attained enlightenment. And so, in other words, every one of us are probably at different levels of learning. But all these different levels of learning are not going to be stagnant, unless you don't want to work. If you don't work, or if you don't try to practice or improve yourself, it's difficult for you to remain at that level as well. You probably regress. That is also a change. So, but we have to understand that everyone is in suffering. Everyone has a lot of frustration. It is possible for us to reduce the frustration if we can develop wisdom and compassion. Okay? So, we need to think about the example of the Buddha and the Bodhisattva, how they attain enlightenment, how the Buddha have attained enlightenment, and he continued to proactively help and guide others. So the Buddha, when he was a prince, he left the palace in search of the truth out of great compassion as well. He has very comfortable life in the palace. Why does he want to leave the palace? Well, he feels the frustration in the mind that maybe it's endless, that you find that the mind is never at rest. But then he also see the suffering of people around, how people in the world struggle for happiness, but it looks like everyone ends up having a lot of suffering. What is the problem? So he wants to find an answer to this. Even up to today, you go out, you have a look, everyone struggle very, very hard, try to create a happy life for themselves. But why do we end up with a world that's full of chaos and fighting and violence? That's because we do not understand what is the right causes that we need to cultivate to lead to happiness. Right? So the Buddha, out of great compassion, he left the palace in search of the truth, and finally he attained enlightenment. Now when he attained enlightenment, he can be at peace and at ease. Then why did he still take the toil and trouble and try to teach people? Again, it's out of great compassion. Because when he attained enlightenment, he can attain nirvana quickly and then be at peace and at ease. That's it. So when he attained enlightenment at the age of 35, he still walked around the two banks of Ganges rivers to teach for 45 years until when he was 80 years old. Why did he need to do that? Because he hoped that the teachings can be spread to more people. More people can understand what are the causes of suffering and how to end suffering. Yes.
I think in the first times, the Buddha thought that the teaching is very hard. It's very difficult for people. So that's why it's gods who come visit him.
Yeah, I skipped that part of the story. Yeah, because I thought you all know, I don't want to talk about those the story then. Yes, the Buddha, when he attained enlightenment, he did hesitate. He was thinking of teaching because that was the main aim, because he left the palace. But why did he hesitate? The reason is the teachings was too profound. When he said non-self, that everything is empty in nature. Everything is causes and conditions. It's not fixed. There's nothing that you can cling on. A lot of people just can't understand. And so when people can't understand, sometimes some people will then defame the Buddha or criticize. So because Buddha is an enlightened one, if someone do not understand, and because out of their arrogance, they criticize or they condemn the Buddha, they're going to create a lot of bad karma for themselves. So the Buddha was thinking, if I teach, it ends up that more people create bad karma because of criticizing, because they do not understand, and because of their ignorance and arrogance, they defame the Buddha, a noble person. That's going to be bad karma, very bad karma. So he thought, if that is the case, then should I teach? So while he was hesitating, the heavenly beings then requested the Buddha to turn the Dharma wheel. And so finally the Buddha reflect on the past Buddha, and then he realized, he decided to teach according to the understanding level of the people. And that's why he transformed the teachings of dependent origination into the Four Noble Truths. So Four Noble Truths is actually the method that he first tell us that there's truth of suffering. So when he teach, he was very systematic. He said, do you have problem? Do you feel that life is very happy? Or some people will say, no, they are not happy. They are frustration, right? So when the audience agree that there are frustration, there are unhappiness, it's not peaceful, then only he asked them, do you know what are the causes of suffering? Okay? And then after talking them about the causes of suffering, then he also tell them that this suffering can be ended, that he has proved that it can be ended. And then he teach us the path leading to the end of suffering. So that's how the Four Noble Truths actually tell us causes and conditions and cause and effect as well. That everything can be changed. If you cultivate causes of suffering, it leads us to suffering. If you yourself are in suffering at the moment, but you reduce the causes of suffering and change the conditions into path leading to end of suffering, right speech, right action, right thought, you can actually end suffering. So the Four Noble Truths is a method for us to practice, but then in there, it has actually incorporate the teachings of cause and effect, causes and conditions, impermanence. Yes.
Questions, maybe it's out of this range, but I would like to know why is Sakha have a lot of involvement of how Buddha become, the Siddhartha become a Buddha and teach. It's the sign of the Siddhartha have to see is Sakha who create. Even in the under the Bodhi tree, when the Siddhartha almost like Sakha appears in another form to remind what the Gautama the Siddhartha doing is wrong.
I'll answer your question later.
Okay.
Okay, we'll continue with this. All right. Okay. All right, so now we talk about the example of the Buddha in helping and guiding others. And so now how can we make sure that we strengthen this thought of purifying ourselves and others? So there are three essential that is very important. First is that we need to develop a strong body mind of looking upon the Buddha as our role model, so set a very strong determination that we want to attain Buddhahood and to be like the Buddha. And then secondly, we need to have this great compassion in helping and guiding others. So as we say, besides purifying ourselves, it's not good enough. We need to help and guide others. And then thirdly, while we try to help and guide others, we need to have wisdom. Otherwise, you may get carried away by when you want to carry out compassionate act. If your wisdom is not good enough, you may entangle into worldly emotion, and that's going to lead to a lot of frustration. So the body vow, or the body mind, so the three, when we want to practice improving ourselves and helping others, it is important to have this body mind. And always, so in other words, we need to learn his great example of wisdom and compassion. And now, a lot of people thought body mind means to be like the Buddha, to attain Buddhahood, and to help and guide others. And they doesn't talk about purifying their mind. In fact, it is not so. Because body mind actually encompasses, the body mind is a great determination to attain perfection like the Buddha. So the Buddha has perfected himself in wisdom, compassion, and purity of mind. And in order to be like the Buddha, sacrifice yourself and help others without attachment, a renounced mind must be developed. If you keep thinking of yourself only, then when you help others, you will be looking for reward. When you help others, you will be looking for praise. And that's why the body mind actually encompasses the renounced mind, the mind to renounce affliction, the mind that renounces worldly attachment. Okay, but then it is coupled with compassion and wisdom. So some people thought, oh, the Mahayana teaching talks about body mind. They don't talk about the mind of renouncing. If you don't have a renounced mind, you find that your help to others will become a worldly help only. So that's something we need to remember. Okay. So, and then the compassionate act that the Bodhisattva need to carry out has to be guided by these three essential. That is the body vow that has to be very clear in their mind. That's like a goal. The goal that they are looking forward to, and then motivated by compassion. So compassion is a very strong motivation force for the Bodhisattva. And then also try to make sure that when they carry out compassionate act, it is always related to, it is in line with wisdom. Okay, So we have to understand that a lot of time the Buddha teach different teachings, but when your mindset is different, then it leads to different results. For example, five precepts. If someone practices the five precepts because they want to make sure that they don't do bad themselves so that they don't fall into the unwholesome realm, or they hope that they uphold the precepts on a certain day just because they start a new business, then this is just a very worldly point of it's a very worldly ambition. All right, so this is only going to lead to worldly merits. That's probably to have a more fortunate life, a better future lives as human being or heavenly beings. If a person upholds the five precepts with a mind of detaching themselves, for example, they say, "I should not steal because I should not be greedy," and so they keep thinking, reducing their afflictions, then they have a renounced mind to free themselves from afflictions. So that's the second type. So the result is that they purify themselves. The third one is that someone remind themselves that they should not kill, should not steal, because they want to make sure that their behavior don't harm others. And not only that, they try to proactively, besides not killing, they try to be more caring, protect lives. Besides no stealing, they try to be more generous, right? Besides no sexual misconduct, they try to cultivate faithfulness, loyalty among one another. And besides no lying, they try to encourage trustworthiness, honesty, right? And besides no intoxicants, they try to encourage more the practice of, for example, meditation that can help to develop clarity of mind. So the important thing about if they uphold the precepts because they want to make sure that they themselves don't do the wrong thing so that their own behavior don't harm others, that is to make sure that people can live in harmony. So that is out of compassion. And then on top of that, try to be a bit more proactive in helping others. So that's guided by body mind. So although the five precepts sounds the same, but when the mind is different, the outcome will be different. The what you're going to achieve will be different. Okay, so that's something that we need to remember. So when we talk about the compassionate act of the bodhisattva, the basic the general practice that usually we say is, refers to the practice of the bodhisattva are the six perfections. So this is the practice of the six perfection. Again, if someone practices the six perfection because of a self-benefit purpose or just from a worldly point of view, then it's not going to end up to be a bodhisattva practice. Six perfection can only be a six perfection for a bodhisattva if it is founded on the body-mind, the compassionate mind of helping and guiding sentient beings and attain Buddhahood. So the six perfection, the first one is the practice of giving, practice of generosity. So a bodhisattva will try to help, try to practice generosity as much as they can because they understand that everything they have come from a lot of people. Even the money that they have, the ability that they have, come from the support of a lot of people. Just like all of us here, we have the ability to listen to teachings, we have the ability to understand, we can read. That's rely on a lot of people's help. Without someone taking care of us since we were young, we probably can't read, right? So we need to be thankful and understand that all these abilities that we have come from a lot of causes and conditions. And at the same time, even if you put in a lot of effort in earning money yourself, you work very hard and you have a lot of money. Some people say, this money belongs to me, why do I need to give? You have to understand that today you are able to make this money or you are able to work. Firstly, your ability already come from a lot of people's support. And then secondly, when you're working, there's causes and conditions as well. If no one wants to employ you, how can you work? You still have to be thankful, although you work very hard for your boss. But if no one wants to employ you, you still can't work. Right? So we need to be thankful, and so a bodhisattva, when they practice giving, they always think that this is not their sole property. They are just a carer. They take care of these things. Whoever needs, they will just give it away. So whether it's money or ability, knowledge that they have, a lot of people help me to gain this knowledge. So when other people are in need of the knowledge, I should actually share with them. All right. So that's how a bodhisattva, they have this great willingness in giving, and they feel very joyful when they see other people needs their help. Because when you want to practice generosity, if everyone said no, thank you, no, thank you, you can't do much. So that's why you have to be thankful to the recipient that allowed you to practice, allows you to cultivate merits. So do not think too great of yourself. You need to be thankful to the recipient. So a bodhisattva is very happy when someone, when they want to help and there are other people who are willing to accept their help. And and also they are able to help others. They try to practice giving with a mind of help, of benefiting others, and also a mind of non-attachment. That's when they after they carry out the act, they don't cling on to the act. Some people, after they practice a generosity, they keep thinking about it and keep telling everyone. If even people do not know, you try to hint them that I've done this act 3 years ago. You know, this person is so successful. It was because something. And so it keep reminding others about the great deeds that you have done. So that means you haven't let it go. Okay? So a bodhisattva understand, in fact, the act arises due to causes and conditions. It just happened that I have the thing here, or I have the ability, and it just happened that you need the ability, you need this kind of help. And we met, and therefore I'm able to carry out the act. Sometimes you find that you have this ability, but no one needs this kind of help. Or the person is not in this area, and you can't provide the help, although you have the ability. So sometimes I say it's just like when you're all looking for a job. You go to a company, the boss say, oh, we really like your talent, but we just engage someone. So you just need to make sure that you have that ability, or you are the type of person that company wants, and that company just happens that they are looking for a person as such, and you are there. Some of you may have this experience. You go there, they say, oh, if you come to yesterday, then we will employ you. But we just take in someone, right? Or you go to some place and they say, we really like your talent, but at the moment we do not need it. Maybe 1 month later. Right? Wrong place, wrong time. So that's why when we give, the act itself arises through the causes and conditions. When the time has passed, it has gone. Okay? So don't cling on to it anymore. So that's practice of giving. Second, upholding precepts. Now, the bodhisattva, when they uphold precepts, they uphold the precepts with the mind of hoping that they themselves do not harm others. So do not think of that I can uphold the precepts, I'm so great. Some people, when they uphold precepts, they become very arrogant themselves. They look down on others. They feel that you have been practicing Buddhism for such a long time. How come you're still not upholding the five precepts? I have only practiced for 1 year. I'm now upholding the bodhisattva precepts or something like that. They start to discriminate one another. Now, the precepts is like a guideline for us to reflect onto ourselves. It's to measure ourselves. It's not for us to measure how good other people are. That's something we need to remember. And more importantly, the precepts are basically the principle behind precepts is actually to remind us to have compassion to others. Make sure that our behavior don't harm others, and make sure that our behavior can help others. Okay? So do not look down on others, even if someone who have break the precepts. Because in Buddhism, we say everything is impermanent. Everyone can change. So when, especially for someone who wants to help and guide others, it is important for you to have this great compassion, especially to people who have done something silly. And then the person feels remorse. Don't condemn them further. All right? Now, there was this story in the sutra of the Vimalakirti, I think. Yeah. He's a bodhisattva. And one day one monk came to him and said, I feel so sad, I feel so remorse because I break the precepts. So there was another monk there said, how can you break a precepts as such? This is very serious. You're going to be reborn in the hell and things as such. And so this Vimalakirti then criticized this monk and said, you should not say so. So what he have encouraged this person who have break the precepts is that just learn from the experience and try to be better. Because the person is already remorse. What you want is to make sure that they improve. After all, everyone can change. All right? So when a bodhisattva uphold precept, that's something that we need to bear in mind as well. And sometimes they don't uphold so rigidly. It depends on the circumstances. There was also a story that a monk and his disciple was near the riverbank, and then there was someone drowning in the river. So the monk jumped into the river and saved it was a lady, and saved the lady off to the bank. And then the monk and the disciple continued to walk. And then the disciple kept thinking, how can my master carry a lady? And keep thinking. And at the end, he can't stand it. Then he asked his master, why did you carry the lady just then? It's not right, right? You're not supposed to touch the lady. You know what the monk said? I have let it down. How come you haven't let it down? After the incident, the monk didn't hold it into his mind at all. His mind is just peaceful. It's untended. But the disciple hold on to that image in his mind, keep thinking. He said, why are you still holding this lady in your mind? I have let it down. Right? So this is just an example on sometimes a bodhisattva, out of compassion under certain circumstances, they may externally, it looks like they are not upholding precepts, but in their mind, as long as their mind is clear and pure, then sometimes circumstances as such is actually not a sinful act. Okay. So, but then we cannot use this as the example and then start to say, oh, I can do anything I like. So some people tend to say, oh, I can do anything I like because I'm practicing the Mahayana teachings. And so that's not right as well, because we have to understand how pure, how steady is our mind, and why do we have to do that at that time? All right. So, for example, this person is drowning; is going to die. Are you not going to help to save just because you want to uphold precepts? That is not in line with compassion. So, what are you going to do? Sacrifice your own precepts and save the life. That's more important. And that ability to sacrifice yourself, don't think that, oh, I break these precepts, I'm going to be in the hell, and then so therefore I cannot help the, and just let that lady die in the river. So that's sometimes there are circumstances as such where the bodhisattva would then uphold the principle, but not necessarily the line so rigidly. But then that is only for bodhisattva who have a pure mind. And so the next one, so we have upholding precepts and then patience. We have to be patient. So now all these practices have to be guided by our bodhi vow, compassion and wisdom. So while we try to carry out this deed, try to remember to reduce our ego, our self-centeredness and our afflictions. When we try to practice generosity, make sure that your ego don't grow, right? And then uphold precepts, the same thing. This arrogance don't grow. Have compassion to others. You see, if you remember this, then you find that when you apply the teachings, it actually helps you to reduce your self-centeredness, your arrogance, and at the same time, it cultivates your compassion at the same time. Okay, and patience. We need to have patience with criticism, patience with less comfortable circumstances, patience in our practice. We need to be patient in our practice as well, in our study. If you cannot sit still and read or meditate, then you're going to you're not going to go in depth into your practice, and. Sometimes we also need to have patience or have endurance in taking up responsibility that is not in line with our interests, but it is something meaningful. Something meaningful, something that is right, but maybe it's not your interest, but then there's no other choice, you are given the task to do it. For the benefit of everyone, you should do it. That is the act of helping others, all right? Not just I do not like it, so and just let it be, and then because of no one doing it, a lot of people are in suffering. So even if it's not your interest, but it is the right thing to do, then we should still do it. So that's why sometimes some people may say certain tasks is or the bodhisattva need to do carry out a lot of difficult tasks. Sometimes it's not necessarily difficult tasks. It's just tasks that is not in your or not your strength or not your interest. So you have to force yourself to do that. So you find it difficult. But then if you find that that is a meaningful task, why can't I do that? Then we need to encourage ourselves to break through ourselves and try to go ahead and do it. Okay, so that's patient as well. And we have to be patient with people around us. That's very important. Patience, be more understanding and modest with people around us. Especially when we want to share the teachings with others, cannot expect everyone is the same level as you. I think a lot of time we may fall into that trap, that we always think that, I've talked to this person, I've persuaded this person so many times, this person is not interested, still to have no faith and confidence in the Buddha and so on. But, like, some of you may be talking to your mom and dad, and because you have been listening to Dharma talk every Friday, and then you taught your mom, every time after you listen to talk, you thought your mom's understanding grows the same level as you. And that's why you thought, how come I'm telling you this is not necessary, or don't think this way. How come your mom still fall back into the same trap? So we have to understand that don't expect everyone's understanding level is at the same level. So we need to have patience, and also put ourselves in others' position. Sometimes from the upbringing, from the cultural background the person comes from, the experience that the person has gone through, allow us to have more to be a bit more sympathetic to the point of view that they have. Then in that way, you'll be able to understand people better. Okay, so patience, and then diligence. Diligence, so a bodhisattva, or someone who wants to practice the Buddha path, will try to practice. Will have to have this boundless diligence, because the bodhisattva's practice or the attainment of Buddhahood is a very long journey, and so we need to make sure that we keep stamina, long stamina, and that the urge to help and guide others, the urge to learn more about Dharma. So we say the body mind is actually supported by the wish for the right teachings of the Buddha to prolong. The wish for all beings to be free from suffering. So if you can have this feeling that now that we are able to learn the teachings of the Buddha is so great. It has enlightened us in certain degree. Just think about if we haven't heard of the teachings of the Buddha, we'll be more blur. We do not know what's the meaning of life, where are we, what should we be working on. So, by understanding the teachings of the Buddha, we feel that it gives us a direction in life. And so we hope that more people can develop this direction. You know, a lot of people in the society are very lost. And that's why moral standard, moral values is deteriorating in the society. Everyone just try to fulfill their desire. If more people can understand the teachings of the Buddha, not say to attain enlightenment or liberation, but at least have some basic moral guidelines, the society will be much more peaceful. So we should wish that these good teachings of the Buddha can prolong. And so with this wish, we will try to learn the teachings of the Buddha as much as we can. And you'll find that the more you learn, the more you feel that it's not sufficient, that the more that we do not know. So we need to learn more. So this diligence has to continue. And then plus that we should share the suffering of sentient beings, that people caught themselves in ignorance and desire, frustration. We hope that we can do our part in helping them to free others from suffering. All right. So with this in mind, then we need to tell ourselves to be always diligent in learning, diligent in helping and guiding others, until the attainment of Buddhahood. So how long is the journey? Don't ask. Just keep working. So a bodhisattva will never say, should I stop this term? No, you just continue. Never ever. You just have to continue learning, continue doing. All right? So no one should stop. So, yes, a bodhisattva should just continue, because it's a learning process for ourselves and for others. It's just, you have to just be diligent in continuing. And so it is by practicing with this diligence in ourselves that we can walk steadily along the Buddha path. Okay, so there's no such thing as am I coming to a station and then stop? We are still not at any station as yet. No station around. All right. And then the next thing is meditation. So meditation is very important. It helps to strengthen our endurance, energy, and motivation, because if your mind is more content, you find that your energy level will be higher and your motivation will be better. When your mind is scattered, you find that like you do not know what to do and you don't have direction. You find that your motivation can also be weaker. So meditation is important, but when we talk about meditation, do not just think of meditation as a sitting meditation or go for a retreat meditation. Meditation can be practiced everywhere. All right. So try to be mindful on whatever you are doing. And the best is to cultivate more compassion and wisdom before going into deep meditation. Because if we do not have great compassion and we got into a deep meditation, a lot of time we tend to fall into the trap of enjoying ourselves in the bliss of meditation. And then your compassion in helping and guiding others will become less. So therefore, to cultivate compassion, understand why do we want to practice meditation? Because we want to strengthen our mind. Why do we want to strengthen our mind? Because we want to help sentient beings. So that compassion is very important. So meditate with great compassion. Do not fall into self-seclusion. And then lastly is the wisdom, cultivation of wisdom. So understand that everything's dependent, originated. They are empty in nature. They are all in the process of changing. So whatever phenomena that we see, do not cling on and attach. So as we say, the practice of giving, generosity. A person who practices generosity understands that the person, the recipient, arises due to causes and conditions. It's just at that moment that this person needs help, and then you have this act of giving, and this person has this ability to give. And everything is just in the combination of causes and conditions. They flow according to the flow of impermanence. It's not there. Nothing to cling on. All right? So with the guidance of wisdom, then when we carry out a good deed as such, we will not attach to it and then transform into arrogance or grouch or hatred or jealousy and so on. So wisdom is a guide for this sixth perfection. It is a wisdom of non-self that the act of compassion can be practiced, can be a practice of perfection, help us to reduce our ego and afflictions. So the wisdom, this sixth perfection, that's giving, upholding precepts, patience, diligence, and meditation, has to be guided by wisdom. it is only when it is guided by wisdom, and because we say in the process we want to also be coupled with body, mind, and compassion, then this act, while we try to put this act into practice, our body vow, compassion, and wisdom can grow hand in hand, and also to make sure that our practice will not fall into just for self-benefit purpose or just for self-purification purpose, but it is for helping and guiding others. So a bodhisattva, not only that they try to develop the wisdom of non-self, understand everything arises due to causes and conditions, they also try to learn as much skills as they can. So we say that the bodhisattva will also engage them in whatever skills that comes to them, that they have the opportunity to learn, because sometimes this skill can help to help others. For example, languages. The more languages that you have, the more skillful you will be. You may say, oh, language just a worldly thing. Yes, it is worldly thing. But we need this worldly thing to help us to spread the teaching, right? Medicine, some people are good in helping people to keep a healthy body. Some exercise, or you know, to play Tai Chi, you keep, make sure that people have good energy so that they can listen to teachings, alright? Science and technology, computer, carpentry, plumbing, some people, if you're good, sometimes at home, you got this thing is broken, that thing is broken, and if you go and help, and then you start to make good friends, and that's when you start to encourage them to learn about Dharma. So you find that that's actually important. Sometimes it's through this. These are actually easier to get to people. Right? So as long as your mind is in the Dharma, whatever tools, whatever skills that you have, they are just like tools. You will apply them towards the Buddha path, in helping and guiding others towards the Buddha path. Whether it is your carpentry skill, or whether it's a computer skill, and then finally we need to also have a logic skill, that is logical deduction, because Buddhism is a very systematic learning. It's very structured, and the theory is actually quite need a clear mind. So to learn about logical deduction is important, and also finally, of course, the inner study, which is the study of Buddhism. Okay, so the core is Buddhism, but then the others can be used as tools for you to approach others. So that's the six perfections. It has to be guided by wisdom. And so if we apply wisdom, body, mind, and compassion in carrying out the six perfection, you'll find that our compassion, wisdom, and body, mind will grow hand in hand. And so the path of the practice of the bodhisattva. Now, besides these six perfection, we say that the bodhisattva also go a bit more active in helping others. So there are what we call the four embracing virtues. These are the methods that the bodhisattva use to relate with others. So just now you say difficult to deal with people. Okay, four embracing virtues are very important. One is practice giving, generosity. I'm not saying that you need to buy a lot of lollies for everyone every day, okay? But generosity as in, for example, give someone a bit more welcoming feeling, all right? So it can be giving of material things, it can be giving of teachings, it can be giving of comfort and encouragement, okay? And then loving speech. That is gentle speech. Speech that make people feel comfortable. Some people, when they speak, you just feel, oh, I like to speak to this person. Just the tone, the language that the person use. So, especially for a bodhisattva or a leader, a person who wants to be a leader, a boss, or a coordinator, right? So some of you will organize activities from time to time. The way that you speak to your team member is actually very important. So your words that is more encouraging, understanding, words that make people feel that's gentle, not harsh, right? Words that make people feel happy and proper praise from time to time. All these are important. So loving speech, speech that's gentle, soft, speech that make people feel happy, encouraging, and make people feel that feel a bit more positive. All right. So these are speech which is also very important. And then the other thing is beneficial act. And when you are the leader, especially when we talk about bodhisattva practice, it's important for us to always think of what can I do for others, rather than think of what can you do for me. So we need to break through with this. Self-centeredness is the main cause of suffering. Always think, what can I do for others? What can I do to make other people happy? What would other needs? Put yourself in others' position. What would they need if you are the leader? So, you're the Unibus president. I think my ex-co, they're so tired. What would they like? They like me to say a few words to them, or they like to meet them, me to treat them a dinner, so you have to put yourself. You have to put yourself in their position. Okay, if I am the member, how would I like the leader? Although in Unibus we are not like in a company where it's boss and things like that, but still, people look upon someone as like the spokesperson from time to time, the final decision or something at time. So you put yourself in as the one of the exco's position and think, well, how would I like my president to be like? Right? So that's, and so when you are, especially when you are practicing, trying to help and guide others, it's important to for us to always harbor in our mind a mind of benefiting others. And then lastly is working together. Important, working together. Don't just set yourself like a big boss and say, do this, and then how come you still haven't finished? I'll make sure that you hand it to me tomorrow. And so not understanding people's difficulties, the problems that some people may be facing at that particular moment, so that caring and understanding, when you work together, then you probably understand a bit better. So that's why I think in Japan they have this system. When they work, you don't get into a manager position immediately. Everyone starts from basic. So when everyone starts from basic, you start from the basic worker. And then when you get to manager, it's already 10 years later or something. And you know exactly what the workers experience, what their lifestyles is about. And so when you set your rules and regulation or you do your planning, you can take into consideration their feelings and situation better. So working together is very important. Okay, so if you don't work together, you do not understand how difficult. Say, for example, you say, set up a table. And you say, why do you take so long to set up this table? Well, come and do it yourself then. Then you probably know how difficult to put this on, right? So if you don't try it yourself, it's hot, it's easy. But you do it yourself, then you wouldn't make unnecessary complaints that make people feel unhappy. So working together is very important. Okay, so the six perfections and the four embracing virtues help us to cultivate our compassion, dealing with people, and at the same time, if we can reflect on our self-centeredness again and again, it is also a practice that helps us to reduce our self-centeredness, so that we can develop our wisdom and compassion at the same time. So the practice of the bodhisattva starts from very important, develop of the body-mind. And then with the body-mind, setting a determination to look upon the Buddha as the role model, we carry out compassionate act. So the compassionate act includes the six perfections, the four embracing virtues, all right? And of course, at the same time, try to relate to the teachings of causes and conditions, dependent origination. And then finally, put more practice into develop the wisdom of penetrating the truth of dependent origination, emptiness. And so with that, it's the first part of the practice. So that's development of body-mind, and then put into compassionate act, and then realizing the truth of emptiness. And then with that, because it was because the bodhisattva was driven by compassion right in the beginning. So when they realize the truth, attain enlightenment, they are still driven by their great compassion. The compassion will become a great motivation force. And so with this great compassion, they develop this supreme body-mind in continue with the practice of the Buddha, and also to help and guide others. So at this time, but because they have see the truth of non-self and emptiness, so they actually are driven by this compassion, that are driven by pure compassion. That is because they don't harbor in themselves self-centeredness anymore. So this is the second stage of the bodhisattva, where they have freed themselves from self-centeredness, but motivated by great compassion, they continue to help and guide all sentient beings. And this is the time that you find that they can do immeasurable act. Because when we are still enclosed, we still have self-centeredness, everything develops from I. And what we can do is within our limit. But when you break through self-centeredness, you realize everything just causes and conditions. There's nothing that we can box up, just like the gas. It can spread further. And that's why these are the great bodhisattva. They can transform in different areas and help people in different places that's in need of help, just like the gas. When we have this self-centeredness, that's where we actually restrain ourselves. Okay, so this is the second level, where with great compassion as the motivation, the bodhisattva continue to help send and guide sentient beings wholeheartedly with a pure mind. And until they finally perfect themselves in all the meritorious virtues and wisdom, then they attain Buddhahood. Okay? So that is the practice of the bodhisattva. So, in other words, when we say that we want to search, we want to, what is the topic? The peace within ourselves. Yes, it is important for us to have this renounced mind, to renounce ourselves from afflictions, to find peace within ourselves. But in an ultimate sense of peace, not only that we hope that ourselves is peaceful, but everyone can be peaceful. Okay? So that's why the bodhisattva, at the end, what they have achieved is an unconditional love for everyone. What do we mean by unconditional love? You all sometimes like to use the word unconditional love. Some people say mom's love is unconditional. Is mom's love unconditional? No? Why not?
Because it's her child.
Yes. So first, it's already a condition. So it's not an unconditional love. All right? So unconditional love, what does it mean? Because usually we care about someone because we see this is a person. So the condition is that this person is related to me, or this is a person, I see the suffering. So that is a condition. But for a bodhisattva, they see the truth of emptiness in everything. But it's just the great compassion, understanding the truth, but then they can still have this compassion in helping and guiding. So they don't rely on any condition as such. They don't rely on, oh, because I see the suffering, so therefore I need to free the person from suffering. or I see the person, so therefore I need to free the person. But for the Bodhisattva, the incident of suffering itself is causes and conditions, is empty nature. The person is empty nature. But they are able to see the truth. They do not attach to the form as what we see. But out of great compassion, they understand people who are in there are still having a lot of attachment, and it is necessary to free them. Right? So the Bodhisattva's unconditional love is basically a love that's free from self-centeredness, and also a love that's developed from the ability to see the truth of non-self, of all phenomena, including themselves. And if we can attain a state as such, then you find that you'll be really at peace. And so if not only that we find peace in ourselves, we can help others to be peaceful, then our place will be a pure land. And that's what the Buddha and Bodhisattva want to create, a pure land for everyone. So if everyone's sitting here, everyone is harboring yourself a mind that's more peaceful, then this is a pure land as compared to the pub outside. So you go to the pub, your feeling is totally different. Right? So that's why it is hoped that everyone can develop a great body mind, helping yourself as well as others. And together we try to spread the teachings, make sure that we try to hope that the Dharma can prolong and more people can be free from suffering. And then together we can create a beautiful and pure society, a pure world for ourselves. Okay, thank you. Any questions that anyone like to ask? Yes.
Hello. Earlier, just now, you mentioned about like how we are more into self-centeredness and try to be better to other people, understand them. So, should we like promote selflessness into ourselves? And another question that I'm curious about is, should we be afraid of Buddha? Thank you.
Afraid of Buddha?
Yeah.
You should not be afraid of Buddha. You should look at the Buddha like your father, like your teacher. Yeah. You should feel healthy, happy and warm when you see the Buddha. So you should not have fear towards the Buddha. And then secondly is that the first question was that should we cultivate sense of selflessness in ourselves? We can start with learning to be less selfish. So always learn to put ourselves in others' position. So try to open out ourselves rather than always think from our perspective only. That is a starting point. Share the feelings of others. Be a bit more considerate. So whenever you want to make decision, if that is your normal habit, then think about, if I say, I make this sentence to her, will she feel happy? Think about it first. Put yourself in others' position. So be a bit more considerate. Put yourself in others' position. That is a starting point for us to reduce our self-centeredness. Yeah.
All right, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you.